Well, in case we have any Awana people in here who aren't always with us on Wednesdays, this is our series on motifs in Scripture, themes, strangely familiar ideas. They keep popping up again and again. And today we're going to look at the idea in Scripture of stars. Stars pop up periodically, and after a while you get used to seeing them. You think, oh, yeah, I know what this is all about. And so today we want to look at stars. Stars are persons of importance, remembering that a person is not necessarily a human. Angels have personalities, so they're persons. The devil is a personal devil. That is, he has a personality. He's not like wind or fire, a force with no personality. And so these are persons of importance, human or otherwise, or they symbolize, stars symbolize persons of importance. And you can see sometimes we're talking about human beings who have importance. Sometimes we're talking about good angels. Sometimes we're talking about the devil and evil angels. And sometimes we're talking about Jesus himself, and sometimes things that symbolize any or all of that. So let's talk about Jesus himself first. In Numbers 24:15, we have Balaam's prophecy. Remember, Balaam is a pagan prophet, but for whatever reason, the Lord has decided to give him true prophecies as he tries to prophesy against Israel. And so this is one of the first and most important star prophecies where Jesus is likened to a star. So read it with me from Numbers 24. Balaam hath said, which heard the words of God and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of the Almighty, falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and Edom shall be a possession, and Israel shall do valiantly. Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion. Well, obviously, this part that's bold and underlined is a prophecy of Jesus. There shall come a star out of Jacob, a scepter, the staff of royalty. There shall come a scepter from Israel, and it'll take over. This person is going to take over Edom and Moab on the right hand side and down south of Israel. They're going to be driven out. The land is going to expand, the Holy Land. And out of Jacob shall this person come who has dominion. And that is a prophecy about Messiah. And you see that here Messiah is called a star that rises out of Jacob. That is, he's a luminary. There's going to be somebody who rises, who is bright, who is a very, very important and powerful person coming from Jacob. Jacob being the nickname for the entire nation of Israel. So this is a prophecy of Messiah. Very early, you see, this is Numbers. We're in the books of Moses here. And this very early writing of the Old Testament says, yes, the day is going to come when royalty rises out of Jacob like a star in its brightness and luminescence. It's a messianic prophecy. Well, then we will remember certainly that first Christmas from Matthew chapter 2, where a star is sent to signal the arrival of this person who is a luminary, this royal person. And so read it with me from Matthew 2 and notice all the places where the star is referenced. Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. Well, a lot of times people imagine that this star must be some sort of a natural phenomenon, two celestial bodies coming together and shining a tremendous beam of some kind that just lights up the sky in an unusual way and attracts lots of attention. This is not natural. This should be considered supernatural. when you are in your car driving along the interstate at 60 miles an hour, you see a star up there. After you've gone a half hour or 1 hour down the road, you are no closer to that star than when you started out. This star can actually stand over where the young child is. It's standing over a house that is supernatural. That would require it to be supernaturally low in the sky and have some sort of a spotlight beam or something directly over where Jesus was being housed. And no star can ever do that. Sometimes there's a very popular theory right now that suggests that all of this is not really a literal star over the house where Jesus was. It was an astrological phenomenon, so that when you look up into the constellations, you see one that would stand for the house of Mary, and the star was in the, you know, constellation of the house of Mary, the Virgin. And that's not the right idea. This is a supernatural light from God that stands right over the earthly place where Jesus is being kept. And the star is the signal that a luminary is present. In this case, they say, where is he that is born the King of the Jews? So this is a star, and the star is not Jesus, but the star is for Jesus. Does that raise any questions or observations? Tom? I'm okay with that. If the star was an angel, if you couldn't hear Tom, he's asking, what if the star is an angel? If the star is an angel, then I think it would be an angel appearing as an extraordinarily bright light of some kind. It would not have the distinctive features of, for example, the angel beings that appeared to the shepherds that were clearly in physical human-like form. But absolutely, can a star manifest itself as, you know, an exceedingly bright light, an angel? Sure, I think that's a nice idea. That's possible. Good. And then we have all of these that refer to the work of Christ. So, for example, 2 Peter 1:19, read this one with me. We have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed as unto a light that shineth in a dark place until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts. Well, the day star arising with the day dawning is a reference to the second coming of Jesus. And so Peter says, we have a more sure word of prophecy, and that is in the context, by the way, of the Bible. So we have a very certain evidence for the faith, a sure word of prophecy, and you better pay attention to it, take heed to it until the return of Jesus, until the day dawns, you know, that day, the day of the Lord, until that day comes, until sunrise come, and the day star arise in your hearts. The day star is actually the planet Venus. And as the sun begins to rise, a lot of times all the other stars fade from view because of the rising sun. But there's one more bright spot in the sky, one last star to see, and that's the planet of Venus. And so the day star. And here we're talking about the second coming of Jesus. Make sure that you pay attention to the Bible, the scripture, until the return of Jesus and the day star, the return of Jesus, arises in your hearts. The same idea is here in Jesus' own words in Revelation 2:26. So read this text with me. And he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron. As the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father, and I will give him the morning star. Well, again, we take this to be the Lord speaking about his second coming. I will give you sunrise when I return. If you're faithful to me, it will be like sunrise. And the morning star designation is the same as what we saw in the Apostle Peter. So this is Jesus himself, his kingdom, his coming. I'm going to allow you to participate in the sunrise of the universe if you're faithful to me. And at the close of Revelation, one more reference like this. Read it with me. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star. So there it is again, the morning star. That would be the planet Venus. And Jesus says, I'm talking about myself here. I am the day star. I am the morning star. And I'm going to give you my blessing, my kingdom, my glory when I appear, if you're faithful to me. So it's Jesus himself. Putting all that together, Jesus is the ultimate luminary, the ultimate star. He's the star out of Jacob. He is the bright and morning star, the brightest star in the morning. And Jesus is that star. So we're going to go another direction now, but does that raise any questions or observations? Jesus is that bright morning star. All right. Well, that's not all. We find that the angels, the normal good angels who have special powers, are also stars in Scripture. So from Job 38:4, this is a very ancient reference to angels. And in this case, the angels are actually singing. Not that it's any big deal, but every once in a while, a wise guy will point out to you, particularly during the Christmas season, do you know that there's no place in the Bible where angels sing? And now you're supposed to say, that's not true. They sing in Job 38:4. So here we are. Read it with me. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Well, that's a reference to the angels who were there at the very beginning of creation and they sang together. And so now you see that the good angels are referred to as stars because they have power. They have a special standing status in the universe. And so not only is Jesus the ultimate star, we also find now the good angels are stars. Shannon. Yes, good. Shannon is asking, are the sons of God also referring to angels in that text? And the answer is yes. The sons of God are indeed referring to angels. There are several mentions of sons of God in the Old Testament, and that is a reference to the angels of God. Virtually all Jewish rabbis take that to be a reference to angels. There's no controversy. So this is a reference to angels. And it's that familiar Hebrew parallelism. Morning stars, the sons of God. Morning stars sing, sons of God shout. Say the same thing in a different way because it's colorful and clever. Rob. Rob is asking, why are there angels already present when the foundations of the earth are laid? We don't know. I personally like the gap theory idea, which can explain that very nicely. The gap theory says there's something wrong in the opening of Genesis because it starts out in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then verse 2, and the earth was without form and void. And we ask ourselves, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. We ask ourselves, since when did God ever make anything ugly and chaotic? It was without form and void and dark. Does that sound like a creation of God? The possibility is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and something went wrong. And when it went wrong, then we have darkness everywhere and we have a flooded out universe, basically. And the Lord has to move water around to create firmament, which you would call space, empty space. So we have this flooded out universe. It's just weird. Why would God? And how long was it like that? Because it says the Spirit of the Lord hovered over the face of the deep water. So it wasn't like a few seconds. The Lord put it together and said, let there be light. It's like apparently some period of time. And the Spirit of the Lord hovering over it like an eagle hovers over its nest. It's like, hey, what's going on there? In that scenario, and by the way, that was a popular scenario when I was a little boy. And Henry Morris, whom I dearly love, connected with Institute for Creation Research, dearly love and admire. He hated the gap theory and lobbied against it so effectively that almost nobody believes in it anymore. But I think it still has merit. In that scenario, you can see how a pre-flooded out universe could have spirit beings that would be there when the Lord said, let there be light. And they could have sung together when the Lord started that new stage of the earth. Joanne. Yeah, I mean, so the speculations from there can go so many different directions. You know, for example, did you ever notice how on the one hand you have the origin of demons being the fallen angels and their spirits invisible so that the guy named Legion can have many, many of them in his body? And they are on earth and they're also in heavenly places. That's the way the Bible presents. Say, OK, I get that. Well, then you have a problem when you come to Revelation chapter 9, because then you have these demonic creatures that look like locust scorpions. And they don't run around in the heavenly places or on planet Earth, and they're not invisible. They're in the bottomless pit and they have a king over them. A king in the bottomless pit? Really? Like, what is that all about? That doesn't sound like fallen angels. It sounds like two totally different classes of demonic beings. Why would there be two totally different classes of demonic beings? Maybe it's because there was sort of like two universes. One that was judged and flooded out, and another one that started on the day when God said, let there be light. But all of that is highly speculative. Nevertheless, good angels, and they're called morning stars. Well, we have the same idea here in Revelation chapter 1, verse 20. Read it with me. The mystery of the seven stars, which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. Like, oh, the stars are angels. And so we have good angels who are likened to stars, called stars in the Revelation 1 text. So not only is Jesus the ultimate luminary, good angels are luminaries too, because they're powerful and they have high status in the universe. Well, Jesus has these powerful enemies too, and they wish to outshine him. They want to be more luminous than Jesus, who's the ultimate luminary. They wish to outshine him, but they never can. Examples of that are in several places here. Isaiah 14, this is the great fall of Satan passage in Isaiah. So read it with me. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Well, I've underlined the word Lucifer there because in Hebrew that means day star. So it's the same thing that we've seen earlier. The day star, that's Venus, the morning star or day star, however you want to call it, the last star that you can see when the sun begins to rise in the morning. And Lucifer is that, and that's what his name actually means. He says that his ambition was to exalt his throne above the stars of God, undoubtedly the other luminaries. I want to be above Michael. I want to be above Gabriel, and I want to be above them all. And so he is exalting his throne. That's his intention, above the stars. And so we find the devil and his evil angels who have special powers are also likened to stars because they are luminaries. So this is, again, all we can do is speculate with some of these things, right? There are certain geometric shapes that don't have a ceiling or a floor, for example, a cylinder. And that might be why you could have a bottomless pit. If you were talking about, that's the old question when we talk about hell. Let's say that we could drill all the way through from here to Australia and put a piece of PVC pipe, just keeps extending it down, okay, so you stand in Australia with a penny, and I'll stand here with a penny, and you drop your penny in the PVC pipe where you live, and I'll drop my penny in the PVC pipe where I live, and what are those pennies going to do when they get to the middle of the earth? Is that guy from Australia going to have his penny shoot up at me? That's not going to happen. Is my penny going to shoot up the pipe at him? That's not going to happen. We think that both of those pennies will get to about the middle and just sit and spin. In that case, it would be bottomless. You just are in a cylinder and you sit and spin. And maybe that's what's happening in the case of hell. Well, that would be only the sides of the pit. We read about the sides of the pit, a bottomless pit. All right, so what do we do with heaven? Heaven is interesting because in heaven, you often talk about the mountain of God. Lucifer says, I will ascend into heaven, exalt my throne above the stars, sit on the mount of the congregation. It's often called the heavenly Mount Zion. Well, that's interesting because it is true. If you imagine a mountain in the shape of a pyramid or in the shape of a cone, there's no ceiling to a pyramid. It's all walls, all sides. And so maybe that's why heaven is likened to a place that is with many sides. And the north, that is interesting. There are verses in the Bible that seem to indicate that north is the direction of heaven. So in the Psalms, promotion doesn't come from the south, from the east, or from the west, but from God. Four directions: God, south, east, and west. So maybe the sides of the north, the mountain of God, maybe that's a good description of heaven, but that too is highly speculative. So I don't know what to tell Alex. That's a lot to explain. Nevertheless, we have the devil and his Tom. I think so. And heaven would be due north and shaped like a mountain, if I have it right. But I don't know. The same idea in Revelation chapter 9, verse 1. Read it with me. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Well, obviously, the star is an angel. And remember, we already looked at the letters to the seven churches in Revelation chapter 1. Jesus said, and the seven stars are the angels. So in the book of Revelation, you kind of expect stars and angels to be the same. Well, here, evidently, that's happening. But this will be an evil angel, evidently, because he opens up the bottomless pit and the demon locusts come out. And so we think that that is an evil angel who falls from heaven and begins this plague of locust scorpions. And so he is a star. So Jesus is the ultimate star, but he's not the only powerful luminescent person in the universe. He has enemies who wish to outshine him. And so the devil and his evil angels. We have this very interesting interface between human beings and angelic beings, evidently in Daniel 8, verse 8. Just for your background, the male goat is Alexander the Great. The four kings who arise after him are four of his generals, because Alexander the Great has no son. So when he dies, four of his generals take over the Greek Empire. And so we have the four horns after the one big horn is deceased. And then out of those four horns, there is one who's really, really, really wicked. His name is Antiochus Epiphanes in history. So that's what all this is about. Read it with me. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, and it waxed great even to the host of heaven. And it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Well, you can see that the stars are mentioned here. These are luminaries. And the question is, are they human or angelic? And we're not sure. this bad little horn that grows great is Antiochus Epiphanes, who lived in the intertestamental period between Malachi and Matthew. Antiochus is the one who came through, tormented the Jewish people mercilessly, and slaughtered a pig in the temple, forbade all Jewish worship, and all the Jewish temple was desecrated. And he was the arch enemy of all Jewish people. And he's the one that is the centerpiece of the story of Hanukkah. When he was conquered, then the Jewish people could cleanse the temple and have their sacrifices there again. And that's how Jesus found it when he was born. That all took place in about 165 B.C. At any rate, Antiochus Epiphanes is so awful that it says, even to the host of heaven. So we're getting recognition from the host of heaven. Those would be angel armies. He's recognized by the angel armies. And he, it says it because he's likened to the horn, but Antiochus Epiphanes cast down some of the host. We think this is a human host. He cast down some of the host and the stars to the ground. So we think those are human stars. And we're going to talk about humans who are luminaries and called stars in Scripture. But you can see the interplay, because he's recognized by the host of heaven, both good and evil angels. And he is causing destruction on earth in Jerusalem near the temple site. And so we have in this case luminaries that are interfacing with the heavens and the earth. And it's hard to tell sometimes if we're talking about angel armies or human armies. Hard to tell. And so it is in many places, by the way, in Scripture. For example, this one. In Judges, we have the story of Deborah and Barak, and they have their battle, and they succeed, and then they sing the song. And you're going to notice that we now have luminaries who are humans and luminaries who are angels, all in the same battle. Very interesting. Read with me from Judges 5, verse 1 and following. Then sang Deborah and Barak on that day, saying, "Awake, awake, Deborah, awake, utter a song. Arise, Barak, and lead thy captivity captive." And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, and also Barak. Zebulun and Naphtali jeoparded their lives unto the death in the high places of the field. The kings came and fought. Then fought the kings of Canaan by the waters of Megiddo. They fought from heaven. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera. Well, so this is the battle of Deborah and Barak. And it says, our kings came out, our generals, and they fought. And then the kings of Canaan came out and they fought. And Sisera, the great general, he fought. But in verse 20, they fought from heaven. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera. That means that while there was an earthly battle taking place, I mean, you ask yourself, why would this lady Jael be able to deceive this great general to come into her tent and then to go to sleep and then to stay asleep while she puts a stake against his temple? If you were worried for your life, do you think you would notice if somebody put a stake against your temple and then took the mallet and drove it through and killed him? Why did he not wake up? He's in wartime. Try doing that sometime to one of our Navy SEALs. They're pretty vigilant. But what if the Lord causes a deep sleep to come over Sisera? What if besides human activity, there's angelic activity? And in the song, they're basically saying, actually, it wasn't merely human. The stars in their courses, good angels, stars, luminaries, persons of power and status, good angels against evil angels. And while it all is happening down here, it's also happening in the heavenlies, and the great clash of good versus evil. And that's the way the song reads. Well, does that raise any questions or observations? You know, it's the same as in Daniel chapter 10. Everything taking place in our earthly armies also is represented in the heavens. So it's the same idea here, Tom. They rejected the Old Testament. They had certain texts that they accepted as authoritative, especially the five books of Moses. And getting outside of the five books of Moses, they don't believe them. Well, now let's talk about normal humans. In this case, humans of importance, but just because they're important doesn't mean they're good, right? They're important and they're evil. And these are false teachers from the book of Jude, verse 12. Read it with me. These are spots in your feasts of charity when they feast with you, feeding themselves without fear. Clouds they are without water, carried about of winds. Trees whose fruit withereth without fruit, twice dead, plucked up by the roots. Raging waves of the sea foaming out their shame, wandering stars to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. Well, there are lots of metaphors here for the false teachers. The feasts of charity, those are the love feasts that took place in connection with communion. Whenever communion was observed, they ate a whole meal together, which is a little like we do on the first Sunday of the month when we have communion. And it says they're sitting with you and they're having all this food with you like they belong. It says they are clouds without water. They promise something they never deliver. They never help by bringing rain. They're like trees with no fruit. As a matter of fact, they're dead. They're so dead. They're totally dead. They're twice dead and plucked up by the roots. They're totally dead. They have no fruit. And then raging waves of the sea, they make a lot of noise and a lot of foam, and it's all shameful. And then finally, wandering stars, you'd call them shooting stars. And you watch them in the night sky, they come across and just poof, disappear into the blackness. And so they're stars. They're humans of some importance. What they're doing has to do with spiritual warfare. They probably have the applause of men, but they are important for evil things. And so humans are sometimes likened to stars, shooting stars, kind of spectacular, but in this case, evilly spectacular. Well, and then you have Genesis 37:9, the great and famous dream of Joseph. And so read it with me. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? So Jacob didn't love that dream very much. But the point that we're making here is in the dream, there are 11 stars, you know, the 12 tribes of Israel. And evidently, Joseph himself would have been the 12th, but he's not exactly described here. But the other 11 stars bow down themselves to Joseph, who would have been the 12th if you're counting the tribes of Israel. And so we find humans of importance, the 12 tribes of Israel. They are luminaries. They have tremendous significance in the great plan of God for the universe. And so humans are called stars. And the same thing occurs here in Revelation 12. So read this with me. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Well, the woman in Revelation 12 is the nation of Israel, and she has a crown on her head with 12 stars. And obviously, John's vision is helping us recall Joseph's dream when the 12 tribes were represented as 12 stars. And so once again, humans of importance, they are luminaries. They are very significant in the plan of God for mankind and the universe. And so they are likened to stars. Billy, the conversation, the dialogue is very short. We know that in the case of Pharaoh, Joseph also interpreted, he said the meaning of the dream. But in this case, you know, it would be like in my family, if Josh came up to us and said, Dad, guess what? I had a dream. What's the dream? Well, the dream is that I have a crown on my head and there are four other people in the house that looks like the house we live in who do everything I tell them to do. Like, oh, I think I understand that. You sorry thing. But that, I think it was evident. But who knows, there might have been a long dialogue that we're not privy to in such a short account. Humans of importance, then. This is the great one in Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. We do love this. And read this part with me. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. So here again, humans of importance are promised to shine like stars in the sky, in space, forever. And it's a great idea. So this is the close of Daniel. There are only 12 chapters in the book of Daniel. And at the close, Daniel is assured that there's going to be a resurrection. You notice it's not just the good guys who are given new bodies, the bad guys too. The good guys are given bodies for everlasting life. The bad guys, the sinners, are given bodies that are appropriate for everlasting death, everlasting contempt. But everybody gets a new body. It's just, is it fitted for heaven or fitted for hell? At any rate, those who have served the Lord well in verse 3, they're going to shine as the brightness of the firmament. Hebrew parallelism. Tell us that another way. Shine as the brightness in space. How else can we say that? Oh, they that turn many to righteousness will shine as the stars forever and ever. And so we find humans of importance are like stars. That's a pretty wonderful thought that the Lord intends to reward his faithful followers so they shine like stars forever and ever. Notice the qualifications. If you're wise, you get to do this. Shine like the brightness in space. And if you turn many to righteousness, how do you influence people? To follow Jesus or to join the rebellion of the devil? How do you influence them? Because you are living the way you live, because you bring the message of the gospel wherever you go. You are, in this case, turning people to righteousness. But if you will not turn them to righteousness, you will not take the message of Jesus, you yourself are building resistance to the gospel because you make the gospel look silly, superficial, then you don't get to shine in the Lord's everlasting firmament. So you have something to say about this. That's a pretty big deal. Does that raise any questions or observations, Tom? Well, I'm not sure, like in the case of Deborah and Barak, I don't think they probably saw the angels, but under the Lord's superintendent's inspiration, they knew that that was taking place. Certainly there were some angel visits, you know, throughout Scripture, but they were extraordinarily rare. You know, just imagine how seldom it would be. I mean, we read about the heroes of the Old Testament, but most of them were not heroes. So you take, you know, like the shepherds in the fields, they had no idea that the angels were going to appear to them when Jesus was born. It had never occurred to them, evidently, because they were so afraid. So it's extraordinarily rare. You know, let us say that David saw an angel. But how many Davids were there in 1000 BC? I mean, there's only one David. So if he's allowed to see an angel, that doesn't mean that everybody gets to see an angel. It's just this one guy on one occasion saw an angel. It's extraordinarily rare. And it's probably not so different than our situation. Because when Rosina Curry, I'll just tell you this for what it's worth. When Rosina Curry, our friend, was dying, she came to this church, longtime missionary in Mexico City. When she was dying, there were a couple things she said. She said, when she was very near the end, she said, I opened my eyes and there was an angel in the corner of the room. And I was so encouraged. And Rosina was not one to be sensational or to say something, you know, like the homeless guy in Texas. She's very sturdy and very level and would not like to mislead people. But she honestly thought that she saw an angel. And I told her I had to go somewhere. And she said, okay, but when you get back, I might not be here. I think I did get to see her again before she died. But we are not without our angel sightings today. I'm not sure that we're behind the Old Testament in that, especially in difficult places, mission stories a lot. So we're not so far behind maybe those Old Testament figures who saw angels, but still, I don't think it just happened very often. So the great news is Jesus' faithful friends, we wish only to shine as lesser lights alongside him in the happy firmament, what you'd call space, of eternity. And this wish is within our reach. If you wanted to be that Daniel guy who was wise and you influenced other people to turn to righteousness, if you do that, then I guess you'll be a star too. You will be a luminary, a person of importance, a person of significance. And that's within reach. That's not outside the realm of possibility for any person in this room, which I think is a great thought. So here's the conclusion. Jesus is the ultimate star, the star out of Jacob, the bright morning star. His powerful enemies wish to outshine him, but of course they never can. We, his faithful friends, wish only to shine as lesser lights alongside him forever, and that we can do. So when you see that thing of the motif, the theme of star occurring in the Bible here and there and again, it should occur to you, oh yeah, I know about this. The stars come up to point out someone who is a luminary or to be a metaphor for that person. And not only that, but by God's grace, maybe I'll be a luminary in that everlasting kingdom. And it's right within reach. That's a great thought.